Welcome to the Bougie Black Brother Network. Good evening and welcome to Rethink Politics, Repo, our political podcast on what's going on in the political world. And our team is together. It's Sir Django.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Eazy-E, but he's Eric today. What's going on, E?
Hey, I'm good. What's going on?
Chilling. Man. Right now, it's back to being hot again because the hurricane just went through. But we wanted to get together and start talking about impact. What is the impact of natural disasters, the response by the government, local and federal, and what is the next steps going forward? Because this seems like one of the worst seasons of natural disasters around the country, you know. And we'll even talk about the Mexico earthquake because they just had two within less than 2 weeks.
Right.
But I want to start off because Hurricane Irma had just went through and it was expected to hit Georgia like a category one, but it shifted to the left and then all we got was a lot of rain, and wind and tropical. But what our impact was were we prepared? So I want to quickly shoot it to Sir Django. slash Chaz.
Yep.
So we talked about it in the last podcast, and what was funny about that was the last question I kind of threw out to everybody was, what are you going to do? Are you going to help someone else? Are you looking to say reach out? But it's funny that it was just headed to us, so it wasn't like we can help anybody. We had to kind of help ourselves. So what is your actions and what did you prepare for that, Chaz?
All right, so it was going to hit, in the course of all days, it came on Monday, September 11th. So the Sunday before, the only thing I was really worried about was debris because there's going to be winds and gusts up to 60 miles per hour.
Right.
So my car, it's just I park on the street. So I took it to a parking deck and I parked strategically to make sure I wouldn't get messed up. Mm-hmm. So just in case it actually got that bad, because it says up to 60, but that's such a huge.
Hold on. Can we just a step back? So you guys got mm-hmm. hit like not the eye of the storm. It was kind of the outskirts of it. Or, you know.
The storm was so huge that even though it was like, I don't know how many miles away, it was pretty, we didn't catch the eye at all. Just being on like the outskirts of it still gave us rain and some high winds.
Yeah.
Now those winds, boy, we hear the you get it, you're like, oh, you know, got a little nervous. Got a little spiritual.
Yep.
What was it, spiritual song? They sing the songs?
Yep. Like, oh, Lordy.
Yeah.
So it wasn't strong enough for you to have to board up your windows or anything. Like, that's 100 miles an hour.
No, but what was interesting was we had power down in certain counties for days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For days. So we didn't have, high winds. It threw some things around. Trees was like, okay, get back on. So my job had to actually shut down because the power in the whole area surrounding DeKalb County where my job was all electric was shut down.
Yeah.
So they couldn't even come in.
You know,
and we was boarding up everything on Sunday before that.
I never understood how so much power can just go out for so many people. I wonder if there's a I see it in developing countries, but are we still have wires on high towers everywhere? I mean, you have
we have overhead.
Yeah, but you would think nowadays in 2017 that there would be an upgrade in infrastructure where you would start, you know, having, cords underground. And obviously you would have the transporter, on the surface. But to have towers everywhere. I'm not talking about those huge towers that you see, the metal ones. I'm talking about the ones in the neighborhoods, the ones that are falling over, that are right. that are dangerous during storms. That almost seems like it's outdated. You would think that, you know, nowadays, at least in this country, they would start moving towards underground, because I'm starting to see that more and more in newer developments. Not sure how it is in Georgia. I'm sure it's the same way, but I just, you know.
So that's a good insight, though, because I look at it like this. I look at it that they're looking to run fiber optics underground. They're looking to do better internet service, but the true cost of your electrical lines, that's state and local ran, and they don't want to put that money invested in it because it's kind of like they get no return on it. Yeah. So why would they
buy it? Like the company?
Well, it's this probability.
Yeah.
For depending on where you live, what's the probability that we'll have down lines, and how fast can we get them back versus can we eliminate whether we get strong, you know, severe weather or not, we can eliminate it. But like you said, there'll be no, you know, what's the return on investment? Assuming that it's like in Georgia Power is run like a, it's not non for profit, it's for profit.
Right.
So that's again, that's a question of what's the role of government? Should government, be a utility? Mm-hmm. I think in this case, yes. Because of, you know, you don't have to ask yourself these kind of questions.
Yeah. I mean, you would think.
I need electricity.
Yeah, well, I mean, you would think there would be, like, regulations on, you know, maybe you're grandfathered in to having, let's just call it old school electricity, on how it's, you know, sitting on those wooden towers that are, you know, that's in every neighborhood. It's pretty common. But you would think that, okay, all right, so it's working fine. Let's not touch that. You're good to go. Boom, hurricane comes in, knocks it down. Okay, now's your opportunity to go ahead and now upgrade, because, you know, this is what the regulations are. Move, you know, but I see what you're saying.
I know. That costs money. And the probability of the next hurricane coming within the next year or so is kind of like, why am I spending all this much money when I can just send out the Georgia Power crew, they fix it within a couple of hours, hang it back up, tape it up, tape, and keep moving.
Yeah, you look at your models, you look at how many severe storms have we had, and you just chart it out versus the cost, how much it'll cost to fix it each time after the storms versus to pay for a total, renovation, for lack of a better word, of the infrastructure.
So all the new infrastructure being built because of new housing and new, you know, retail, new businesses, they're going to do something to conform to that, but they have the money to do that. So as it reaches a certain point, of course they're going to do that. But the problem is, and you know, when you said that, the first thing that came to my mind was lead pipes in Ohio. Why would they take them out? They was like, we ain't bothering with that. We got the money allocated for it, but we can use that for something to bring in more business. We can use it for this. We'll get to the pipes a little later because it's not hurting anybody right now. The probability that somebody will get sick, especially in those black neighborhoods, is kind of low. So why even bother? But in this case, you know, again, we don't get those high winds at that point. And Chaz, you made a great point. The probability factors and the risk management people are saying, based on the statistics and the numbers and the analytics that we're putting together, that's 5 in 2,000. So why would even bother? So it's a big probability issue. And then what government actually does is, how do I use the money that I have in a better way to make more money or to make myself better? It's not looking at infrastructure in that way.
I want to back up, though, because we talked about preparing. And I'm curious, Mike, on your side, how did you feel about the information that was given and just preparation on your local level?
So I watched it anyway. So I was watching the trajectory of the actual hurricane coming through or the storm that was coming through.
And just for the record, yeah. Very nerve-wracking. So, you know, when you look at the images on TV, you're like, is that going to come to us directly?
A direct
And then
hurricane.
You just wonder. You look, that's when you got to think about your insurance policy.
and
you got to think about a lot of things, depending how strong the storm is, you know?
So we got good information. It wasn't anything. It wasn't panic stricken. It was prior to the trajectory changing. So it was really like, be prepared, board up your windows and blah, blah, blah. The good thing about where I'm living, we're on a higher elevation. Elevation. The storm wouldn't come up where we are. It'll hit and we'll get
those winds
some up. Flooding. And we only had electricity that went out for only about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. That's
bad.
It. So we were fine. But everybody below us was for a couple of days.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So in Gwinnett County, there was a couple of areas in Gwinnett County and even Fulton that was next to us. They were out for a couple of days. So in our area, because of the elevation, we were in a good position. But preparation-wise, we was pretty good. But when you was looking at this, what was the impression? Because we was right in it. But what was the impression that you saw that was going on beside the devastation? And I'm serious about the devastation that we all have been seeing that was in Florida.
Are you saying in terms of it coming to Atlanta?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, usually, like, for example, we were talking about it too, Chaz. We was looking at what was going on in Florida. From a distance, we're looking at it. But from a distance, you know, ease up in D.C. in the DMV area, and it wasn't hitting that way, but you still had that circling. What is that, Jose? Circling out on the coast and looking at what you saw here and what was in Florida. Did you hear anything like prepare yourself, or was it like, wow, that's just fucked
mean,
up?
I'd be lying if I'd sit. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, honestly, we were watching it. I mean, it's all over the news, just to be honest. It was everywhere. So it wasn't like it was an afterthought out here. We were watching the same things you guys were watching, even on our local news. So it was what was going on was, as it was hitting Florida, it hit me like, oh, this is about to go. This is about to hit Georgia. It was going west, which is crazy. Like, I've never seen any storm just go left. Or just go west. That I saw that, and then you know how the currents were. They go from west to east. So I'm kind of thinking, oh, this is about to hit us, you know. But you know, they explain how it will take like 3 days, and then on Sunday it hits you guys in Georgia, and then it'll turn into a tropical, and then it just becomes spread apart, and it just becomes a bunch of storms that we get. So we didn't get anything, and we weren't projected. As it was moving to get any part of the storm, it was really just going to turn to regular thunderstorms, severe thunderstorms at the worst. So it wasn't until before it hit Florida where we were getting news, well, hey, you need to get ready because it can go up the East Coast, where it actually went a little further west. So we didn't get it exactly the way, you know, they were somewhat projecting it to possibly come our way. So the percentages are pretty low that we would get anything close to what you guys got. But in terms of evacuation and preparation, we honestly didn't get it. There wasn't any kind of announcement, a public announcement or anything. It was more of a just be, you know, pay attention and news alerts hitting us. So, you know, once it hit Georgia, I didn't hear much about it after that, because that's pretty much when it started breaking apart.
So I want to flip real quick to what I heard this morning, which is the Red Cross. Because I've always been cautious about them. I've always, for years, given my money to the Red Cross until I started doing research saying, where the hell is my money going? And it really made me change my mind during Katrina, when we found that the money wasn't getting there in time. And then when Haiti found out that it was like 25 to 35% was administrative cost. And right now, we're hearing even Florida that the people who supposed got the money $400 to get they self together, it still haven't gotten to them. And now they say they're over, it was inundated with calls and everything. And I'm wondering, do you have your trust in these organizations that's supportive of the government? You know, I still haven't heard anything what FEMA is doing. It seems as though they're keeping that low key. I tried to do some research to find what they're really doing and what's the word, but I just haven't had anything. Have y'all heard anything in reference to those two subjects, the Red Cross or FEMA?
The only thing I've heard about FEMA was how they were going to lose money. They were running out of money after Harvey, and then which one was first? Was it Irma? I think it was Harvey, and then it was Irma. That's right. After Harvey hit, all I kept hearing about was how FEMA was running out of money because Trump's administration was taking money away. I think it was FEMA was probably just asking the government for as much money as possible, while I'm sure the Red Cross was just trying to just get as much money as they can, because I mean, hurricane after hurricane. So I'm not sure what they were doing nationally or even internationally.
Yeah, I feel like the same thing, and I've always just been suspicious of Red Cross and Wounded Warriors. I think they've had bad press in the last couple of years, so I'm just suspicious.
Yeah, I'm not really comfortable with them, and I'm looking, and I think we spoke to it again at the last podcast, was I'm looking for organizations who are just helping outside of the Red Cross. Because I had a couple of people who was actually driving trucks down there to Houston. And there was a lot of my friends or people who I was, you know, associated with that were getting stuff together for them. But it's hard. It's good that people get together to do that. But if we're paying our taxes and these organizations and actual government organizations aren't doing their part, that's my point of rethinking politics. Do we depend on them? Do we commercialize it and start making certain things for profit? Because if you make it for profit, you're going to be running into the same thing with the Red Cross. You're getting a high percentage of administrative costs so people can line their pockets, and then the remaining are going to the people. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, the Red Cross is so big, I understand how that's the first thing everyone thinks of. Is, you know, I mean, okay, well, the way I look at it is, if the Red Cross, you can give them money and you know they have the manpower to get what you want done, meaning you want to help this area, maybe you want to help Puerto Rico, so you know the Red Cross will go down there. Now, to understand where that money is truly going, because maybe they already have the money and your money is just pocket change, you know, that's kind of the area I need to do more research about, because I'm not really sure. I hate to use the word alternatives to, but I guess disaster relief programs, whether it's churches or, you know, state programs. I mean, I'm sure there's actually international other Red Crosses, quote unquote, out there that do similar things. So, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, I have to do more research to find out what is out there. Obviously FEMA is another out there too. And there's other ones out there.
So what about you, Chaz?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the questions that I always just like to ask myself is, what is the role of government? And of course that's where nonprofits can come into about, because they kind of fill those gaps that government really can't do. Like, you know, a non-for-profit equals, like the Boys and Girls Club, equals a great solution. Obviously, the government doesn't need to be in the after-school business, per se. Right. But at the same time, when just like a business, you know, it's a social, in terms of quote-unquote customers, if it's not necessarily filling that void like it's supposed to, you know, like a cassette player, CD player, you know, you need to go ahead and phase it out. So I would say, I think we're kind of on the verge of like the next era of new nonprofit or like social impact businesses or like these hybrids. I'm saying like a nonprofit will have a mission and do its thing, but also have services so that it has revenue. So I think when you have more so maybe a more self-sustaining business model, I think that's more, people are more apt to, you know, give it a second look and say, okay, you're not just 100% dependent on donations. You're doing something.
Another support, you know, organization
mm-hmm.
other than that.
And because, right, because you're providing a service, that's you can assume, okay, there's going to be some talent there, some this or that, versus people just sitting up, you know, and that's basically creating the admin fees, just creating huge salaries, lavish parties, and et cetera, et cetera. So the short answer is long term, in the next couple of years, I think we're going to see new models come out of the nonprofit right. space mm-hmm. slash social, like businesses kind of moving towards the social impact. Mm-hmm. So kind of like a cross-pollination between the two.
So that's great. So I kind of set y'all up for this actual question, because it may sound mm-hmm. blasphemous, but based on the Trump administration, they're making a change in the way what government really should be doing and what we have been allowed to let happen with our government officials. Because what he's doing is saying, I don't give a fuck about tradition. We're going to do things this way. And I don't know, which is where my question is, will that be a lasting effect? Or do you think once he's gone, will it revert back to the same way it was? Or the things that he's been trying to destroy, and we're headed down a way of saying we don't want government to do these certain things? Do you think that's a trend that will actually stay? Or will it revert back?
To me, I feel like, look, what Trump is doing and his administration is doing is, I think it's left field. I think it's abnormal. I don't think it's even common sense. So, I mean, you even hear Republicans, you know, they're saying how we need to give money to this disaster relief program in Texas and then this one in Florida. But then you have the Trump administration not saying a word, really, about giving FEMA more money. So that the feeling seems like this is not normal. And yes, I do think it will go back to normal, whether it's a red or blue, you know, president or whoever wins the presidency. But it just feels like Trump is one of those situations where he's just trying to make his base happy. So he's trying to put the money where it feels best. You know what I'm saying? So now is the right time to say, okay, here you go, FEMA,
since
you're asking for the money. But, you know, when it's wintertime and they don't need it because there's no hurricanes or anything devastating going on, you know, you're not going to hear. So I think he's more reactive rather than
pull it back.
Proactive or even thinking ahead when he's doing a lot of his decision making. And I feel like that's not what a president is supposed to do. And that's exactly what he is doing, though.
Yeah. No. So I agree with that. It's not what a president should do, mm-hmm. but Chaz?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree in a nutshell. The only thing I wanted to add, or the only caveat I'm thinking of, is for the question is, you know, what impact will it make to government? But obviously there's so many layers of government, city council, mayor, state level, and Congress, Senate, president, we know, whatever the case. So for the federal government, I'm kind of thinking of like an analogy of almost like a phase, where it's like, you know, like the analogy is Obama was the ex that we want back. Mm-hmm. So like now we're dating, you know, the biker guy with the tattoos, mm-hmm. the bad guy, but we realize this might be a mistake. So now we're out of this phase and we're going to go back. You know what I'm saying? So on the White House level, that's what I'm thinking. Local politics kind of remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of races going on, and I don't think that's really impacting it. I just think it's firing up both sides. But we did see, do you guys remember the dude who, the rich guy who's running in Montana somewhere, who punched a reporter?
Yeah, and
he still won. So, kind of to your point of, like, different social norms, you know what I mean? Below a certain level, I think that's kind of remains to be seen, because Kit Rock, it's crazy to say that Kit Rock is going to run and has a great chance of winning now. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because of his notoriety and his toxic fucking dialogue. You know what I mean?
Like, just the idea of Trump. I feel like Trump just plays a role. I think he's actually just like a jackass. You know what I'm saying? Like an actual, like he just hates. I mean, if you listen to his quotes or you just go through and understand his message, it's anti, like, diversity. It's anti Obama. It's anti, Kid Rock. Yeah, I mean, the stuff that I'm hearing, that I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, though, but I mean,
no. It's funny because Kid Rock started off rapping.
Yeah, he sure did. Yep, and was rapping with the flag. You know what I mean?
And
maybe they converted him. I don't know.
Yeah. So you know what a hill turn.
So
they converted.
This is where I was going with that, because if you're seeing the Republicans were trying to hold out and not giving in, they were saying, well, we'll give in to everything that Trump has. But now that he's going rogue on any and everything, they're concerned that, one, they won't get elected. Two, there's certain things that the government should be doing together, bipartisan. And a little of that is happening. And they show that the president can go to the side that he wants to. So they're left holding the bag, because now with this immigration thing, he's turned to the Democrats and said, hey, let's put up a deal together so we can get these people to stay, the dream people. Yeah, that's crazy. Totally crazy. But here's where I wanted to go back, because prior to probably around the Reagan first Bush administration, you had a lot of bipartisan bills that went through without any problems, because they knew what the nation needed. They didn't get into their little groups and just say, if it's Democrat, I'm totally against it, and we all going to have to be against it.
Well, you know, the other side of that theory, in my opinion, I don't know, I have to check the validity of this, but they're saying a lot, if you look at a lot of the history of the, and this goes back to post-World War II, a lot of the people in the House and Senate were basically comrades. So it's kind of like, whether you're Republican, Democrat, whatever, you know, this I sat in the trenches with this guy, or, you know, what this she was, this woman was, I knew her, she was like in the VA, she was a nurse, she was a whatever, to the soldiers. So a lot of these guys had like a connection through the military. And I think in the 80s, Reagan and even into first Bush, that's post a lot of dudes who went to Vietnam and who are now legislators. So just that kind of gave them like a commonality. But with this generation now, you know, with the current generation of people in government, they don't really have, what commonality do they have versus the commonalities in the past?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I hear that, but the type of pressure that people are under now,
it's pressure. I feel
they're
like
being shown that, for example, there was a common enemy, which was Obama for the last 8 years. So no matter what went on, they went for that. So now it's like, okay, we got a guy that's on our side. But now they're realizing this guy really ain't on our side. You know what I mean? I was kind of like, damn, you idiots. You should have known that while he was running.
Right.
But they just thought they can get whatever they wanted through him. And it didn't work, because this guy's an egomaniac, psychotic person.
Isn't this a movie? Isn't there a movie where like a bunch of corrupt businessmen? I guess I'm thinking of Batman. Remember they made that deal with Bane?
And, I kind of feel like that
Batman.
Okay. As you kind of see how the dynamics are working, it feels like the Nancy Pelosi's and what's the guy from New York? Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer. I feel like his personality or their personality, which is feisty,
Chuck Schumer.
And then you have Chuck Schumer, who's like the true New Yorker, just like Trump, you know, and their personalities, I feel like they mesh a lot better with Trump. Like almost like they can speak Trump's language when he's paying attention, where Trump has conversations with Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. And then he's like, he doesn't get it. He's like, why don't they understand that I need this done or I need this done? And then they just don't mesh. I really feel like they're bumping heads in terms of just like, I just like their personalities don't mesh. And I think that's what's happening. They got the Democrats in the room, the leaders of the Democrats, or at least in the House or the Senate. They got them in the room and they're just keeping it real. They're just honest. Or they had a dinner, I think it's what it was. And they're just talking straight up. And they said that's the way they were able to get him to switch over or to hear them out. And then everyone was surprised that they said, yes, okay, let's do that. And then all the Republicans were pissed and they didn't understand what was going on. But to me, it seems pretty simple. Like, well, obviously they know what cards to play because they know him. It's pretty simple. I mean, it seems like these Mitch McConnell phonies that they're not even their true selves. I don't think they believe a lot of stuff they say, but I actually believe the Democrats do, you know?
Yeah, but the problem with them, with that Republican side, is they're trenched into this ideology that everyone should believe this one doctrine. And I forgot the guy that they, back in the late Reagan eras, forgot his name, but they said they all pledged to that. And they was like, that's all we're gonna do. So they didn't even want to, it was a conservative pledge or whatever, but they don't want to, you know, turn from that. Where the liberals and the Democrats will bend on any goddamn thing. So that's why they can barely get so much done, because they're continuing to bend and bend and bend. But that's a great point you made.
Right.
These guys were talking his language because it was a business conversation as opposed to a political conversation.
Yeah, especially... What's Schumer's background though? What is he? Is he was from something like Bloomberg?
I don't know about Schumer. I think he was one of those guys who's been there for a while, but you know, I don't have any.
Yeah, I heard on I was listening to some podcasts, some other ones, like the New York Times one that I always mention. apparently, he did some business with Trump back in the day, and they, like, when I say back in the day, you know, these guys are a lot older now, but, you know, they're New Yorkers. Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you're a millionaire or above, you kind of have your own little, you know, fraternity that you can, grouping circle you can go to, but they've done some business before. So it's easy, like, he just knew how to talk to them. He can read Trump, you know, that was not a problem. And Nancy Pelosi's already kind of, I don't think they had any history, but she's kind of feisty in her own way. You know, I don't know if I get down with her necessarily on how she does it, but it doesn't matter. You know, she's honest. At least hope you are. But anyway, I think the history is they just kind of have that New York vibe, and they kind of, you know, Mike knows. Mike.
So Chuck's background was always political. He was in the New York State Assembly early in his career. And then he was a congressman before he actually became a senator. So he transitioned from Congress, from a congressman to, I mean, from the House of Representatives to the Senate. So he's always been that New York guy that kind of just worked his way up. And so he has some cachet that he can use for all types of things. So to your point with him doing, Trump doing real estate in New York, and he's being that part of, you know, the New York State Assembly, they probably was shaking hands on a lot of shit. Because think about it, most of these politicians had their hands out for him anyway. Because he was a millionaire donating to their to their campaign.
Especially being from New York. Now,
I mean, if you want to get that high building, you know, because they have regulations on how high these buildings are. I'm sure you could just shake a hand.
Yeah, gotta clear that airspace. Yeah,
look, I'm trying to get this $1 million building over here. I got this other one coming in. I can build this block up for you if you can give me this one in this, you know, over in Queens or something. I don't know. So that's easy.
Yeah. And go ahead and throw up that discrimination lawsuit.
I'm gonna put some condos in, and I'll give you a top shelf.
I just don't like renting to people named Keisha and Tyrone. But one thing I do want to talk about, though, on the topic of Democrats, so the state of the Democratic Party now, this is post release of Hillary's book, and then Bernie with his single payer system. And what I'm thinking of is, I was talking to somebody, and I was basically telling, I was like, man, you know, Hillary needs to sit down somewhere.
Yes.
And she's pro Hillary. She was like, you know, da da da. What are you, a Bernie bro? And I was like, no, I like Obama.
And he was the president.
You know? I wasn't really a fan of Hillary or Bernie for my personal politics for the 2016 race. I ended up voting for Hillary, but it was right. But I'm just thinking now. Her reaction to that just kind of was interesting to me because she works in politics, but I'm sure there's a lot of Hillary people who feel like Hillary's being marginalized, but at the same time, you have a lot of Democrats and even Republicans who's like, well, independents, I should say. It was like, Hillary, bro, you take the L and sit down. Like, the analogy is, imagine the Atlanta Falcons let the Patriots come back and beat them and then write a book about it. And man, I should have, you know, we should have won the game.
And the Patriots are called the Patriots cheaters.
Deflate gate. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm just kind of like,
I agree. Yeah. And that bothers me because, you lost and we don't even know why you lost. But right now, just help out, if anything, help them with the damn Russian investigation. Go behind closed doors so when it comes out and they find out something was there, then you can talk shit. But right now, you're just a sore loser. You know, because Gore didn't even do that. He went into hiding and started working on the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what about Bernie's single-payer thing? I mean, there's talk, quote-unquote, of you have the moderates who are kind of whatever for it, then the progressive wing who want to go, you know, for a more progressive healthcare push. Is that is this an issue, really? Or what do you think will happen with this bill?
So he took advantage of the opportunity that the Affordable Care Act failed. And they didn't have anything to come up. So he was like, if y'all don't have anything, let's just bring up what I've been talking about.
Hold on, let me do the voice. Republicans, they have nothing. I have a bill. I can't help it.
So he took advantage of that. So is it worthy coming out and try to bring it up? No, but
why not?
Well, yes. He's yes, old. It is. I'm not going to say no. Yes, it is. Because why not? Yeah, I mean, you're right. That's why I had to say don't say no. Why not? Because if you don't have a plan and the only viable plan has been created and you really can't come up with anything more than that, it might be viable. If the whole other, the world has something similar to
you
that,
you know what's interesting about that?
Not try to do that?
When he put it out there, then of course you need people to sign it or, you know, to follow it or support it, whatever the word is in politics. But the people, the names that were coming up, they were saying how, at least on the news, the Democrats that were popping up were potential presidential candidates for 2020.
Really?
So they're saying when you do that, this is the perfect opportunity to put your name on something that most likely won't even go through, but to say that you did it, it's easy to follow. And you take Bernie's supporters. So you can use that down the road easily. So, so the first...
Big time.
Right, it's always politics, yes. So the first is... So what was interesting, the first person was Kamala Harris, the woman from Cali.
Right.
Yeah. She's she popped up on there. She was the first one, and then it was silent for a little bit. I'm talking in terms of a time frame, a timeline, and then the second person was Elizabeth Warren. She popped up on there next in support,
amazing.
And then quickly, then it was Cory Booker.
Damn.
And then who's the guy that was on SNL, the comedian that became the senator?
Al Franken.
Boom. He was number Al four. Franken. And then it starts trickling down. He was number four. And then I forget who number five or who the fifth one was. It was a familiar face, probably the Virginia guy. I don't know his name. That ran. I don't know. But then it just kept going on. Now there's like, I don't know, it's like 20, 30 people now, or more than that maybe. But you could so what happened was those early ones, and then there was a little bit of a gap, and then people start jumping on. And then they said that's how it normally works in history. When things like that pop up, you try to piggyback off of the fan favorite, I guess you could say, or just to put that on your resume and say as a talking point, I wanted this. This is because the healthcare bill is one of those important things that people kind of latch on to on top of immigration, on top of foreign affairs, yada, yada. You want to put your name with Bernie, with those supporters. So anyway, I thought that was interesting, not to get away from the whole single payer bill in the first place. That's a great idea, but they're still saying it's unlikely because you need Republicans to push that through. So,
but the good thing is they don't have anything.
Yeah.
So it gets traction. And even if it eventually fails, it gets traction. Mm-hmm. And to your point, if you got these high profile politicians that's ready to run within the next 3.5 years, they got something that they can say, well, we tried for you, but when I start running, we're going to change everything that Trump did. So they're going to do the opposite of what the Republicans said when Obama left. We're going to change everything. We're going to reverse everything that Trump has done. And that's what they can run on. Because if they can run on that, even the Trump supporters who didn't get what they wanted but realized what they wanted was what they had, they're going to start listening to it. And it's not as long as it's not a black guy, I think they'll be fine.
I mean, they got Herman Cain and the HUD guy.
That's but he's a buffoon.
And oh, my God.
The urban guy.
Coon alert. So.
Yeah. Ben Carson.
Stay tuned to our part two podcast of Hurricanes and Political Turmoil on Rethink Politics Repo on the Bougie Black Brother Network.